KMXT and Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, President Obama puts a big chunk of the Bering Sea under permanent protection before he leaves office. Craig is on its way to a new harbor. And would you describe a Pribilof blue king crab as more like a unicorn, or where's Waldo? We'll find out that and more on this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
President Obama issued an executive order last Friday protecting a large section of the northern Bering Sea from the mouth of the Kuskokwim River to the Bering Strait. The order withdraws about 40% of the area from offshore oil and gas leasing and reaffirms a ban on bottom trawl fishing. APRN's Liz Ruskin has the story of the elders meeting in Bethel, where the idea for the northern Bering Sea Climate Resilience Area first took root.
Alaska's congressional delegation pre-reacted before the order came out, warning the president not to close off any more of Alaska's ocean. A Utah congressman, chairman of the House Resources Committee, Rob Bishop, accused Obama of trying to starve the Trans-Alaska pipeline of oil and choke off ship traffic to the Alaska natives on the North Slope. But for 64-year-old Harry Lincoln, a subsistence hunter from Tununak, this is not a case of the president imposing his will on distant seas. Lincoln is chairman of the Bering Strait Elders Group. He says he was stunned to learn the president has acted on the urgent request of the 39 tribes Lincoln represents.
It's the happiest moment I've ever had in my life.
The level of presidential responsiveness to a group of some of the poorest and smallest Native communities in the United States is the real story here.
Native American Rights Fund attorney Natalie Landreth says the story began not in Washington, but in Bethel in July of 2015, just before the president's Alaska visit. The Bering Sea elders were meeting, and Landreth was there as their attorney. The elders, she says, were worried about the decline of sea ice and what the predicted increase in ship traffic would mean for the marine mammals they hunt.
And somebody said, I wish I could remember who, let's ask the president for help. And I said, that's what you would call a Hail Mary.
But Landreth says the elders resolved to try.
Over the past 15 months, people from rural Alaska villages went to the president's office and said, this is what we need.
The order, she says, mirrors a resolution the Bering Sea elders passed in June. Landreth says it can prevent the kind of conflict now seen with the Standing Rock Sioux over the North Dakota Access Pipeline, because a main theme of Obama's order is the early inclusion of Bering Sea tribes in federal decision-making that concerns their region.
It's not just the text of the order. It's the fact that the president would spend an inordinate amount of time to try and help these people. I've never seen that in my life. I'm not sure that we're going to see it again.
The area the president is withdrawing from oil leasing is roughly Norton Sound, the Southern Strait, and around St. Lawrence Island. Governor Bill Walker issued a statement saying he supports tribal leaders in their efforts to protect their resources, but that he's concerned about lost development opportunities for the state. Landreth says the withdrawal doesn't harm the economy because, she says, the area has been offered and explored in the past with no results.
So this is not a commercially viable area. It just isn't.
And now it likely won't be. Obama used a provision of the Offshore Leasing Act known as 12A. Drilling opponents maintain these kind of withdrawals are permanent. Legally, the next president, Donald Trump, could undo Obama's executive orders, but historically, these orders tend to endure. With help from Rachel Waldholz in Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin, reporting from Washington, D.C.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you, in part, by Alaska Boats and Permits. Marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
A bill on its way to the president's desk authorizes most of the money needed to build a new boat harbor in Craig, but the funding itself will wait for future congressional action. The legislation includes about $29 million for the harbor in Prince of Wales Island's largest city. Craig Administrator John Bowling says that's the cost of planning and installing large breakwaters.
They're high-cost items, and they need to be in place first before any floats are constructed, because the site is too exposed to add a float system in without the protection of the breakwaters.
About another $3 million in state and local funds are needed to install floats and related infrastructure. The authorization comes from the Water Infrastructure Improvements Act, which passed the U.S. Senate last weekend. It already passed the U.S. House. It also authorizes federal spending for other Alaska projects, including harbor work at Elfin Cove, Valdez, Little Diomede, and St. George. Bowling says there's only a preliminary harbor design at this point, but it will include room for commercial and private boats of various sizes.
It's a mix of long open runs of float and conventional slips, stalls for various boat sizes from smaller boat lengths of 20 feet up to 60 or foot long or greater.
Alaska's congressional delegation pushed to include the funding authorization in the water bill. Bowling says it's a very important step towards construction. Craig already has about 220 slips plus transient moorage in two existing harbors. The new harbor will be built at the old Craig Cannery site. The last commercial harvest of Pribilof Island blue king crab was almost two decades ago, 1999. Extremely low population numbers have kept that fishery closed. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Zoe Sobel has more on St. Paul Island's effort to bring back the species.
It's really hard to find blue king crab off St. Paul Island.
They're almost like unicorns in the trawl survey now.
That's Lauren Devine, co-director of St. Paul's Environmental Conservation Office.
There are very, very, very few being found. And almost when you find one, it's kind of unreal. It's kind of surreal.
As the blue king crab population goes down, fishermen on St. Paul Island face more restrictions to reduce bycatch. And when those crab are caught accidentally, that can lower fishing quotas even more. Those precautions are intended to protect crab and help the species rebound. One idea Devine thinks could help the species recover is outstocking. That's when female crab are plucked from the wild, flown to a hatchery where their eggs are raised until the young crab are dime-sized, and then they're all returned to the ocean. That method is being tested in Kodiak on red king crab, and Devine says they're seeing positive results.
That gives us a lot of hope to say if it worked with red king crab, there's the potential that we could do this outstocking and we could put these babies in the wild somewhere where we can go back and check, and we could actually track survival and see the molt and see, you know, the success of these crabs surviving.
But the restrictions in place to protect the crab also make it difficult to do research on the species. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game would have to issue a permit to allow Devine to remove crab out of the water. That permitting process takes a long time, but Devine thinks it's time to try.
In the 16 years that we've been looking at this species and trying to rebuild the species, nothing else has worked. There is nothing to suggest that simply not touching them is going to do anything for the population in the future.
At this point, she says scientists have exhausted other ideas. There's only so much you can take from one population and apply to another. Devine dreams of the day St. Paul's fishermen will be able to fish without being limited by blue king crab bycatch. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in St. Paul.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K-12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
Former Juneau State Representative Beth Kurtula returned to Alaska this summer after 2 years serving the White House as director of the National Ocean Council. In that position, she helped two regions write the country's first marine plans and worked on some issues very important to Alaskans. APRN and KTOO's Andrew Kitchiman sat down with her to talk about the future of the oceans and Alaska.
Kurtula says it's important to plan for the future of the oceans that surround Alaska and the rest of the United States. She says just as people can have personal trauma when they don't plan for their futures, the U.S. oceans could face disaster.
If you aren't planning where your ship lanes are, if you aren't planning around the sea mammals, if you're not planning so that you can have development, then you're going to have a mess at some point, and you're going to have conflict between subsistence users, between the developers.
The attraction of making a difference for the future of the oceans is why Kurtula left the Alaska House of Representatives in 2014, after 15 years. The Juneau Democrat served as the minority leader for her last 7 years in the House. She spent 6 months at Stanford University's Center for Ocean Solutions before she joined the National Ocean Council. President Barack Obama formed the council under an executive order in 2010. Kurtula explains why he did it.
It's a huge challenge right now with the ocean. We're facing some very severe problems: ocean acidification, erosion, sea level rise, the lack of coordination among users, the lack of coordination among the federal agencies, and all of those things are really coming to a head.
The National Ocean Council includes 27 federal agencies. Kurtula worked with officials in all of the agencies to plan with state and tribal governments. The council adopted the first two marine plans on December 2nd, covering the waters off of the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic. She says planning is especially important for Alaska.
We have so many conflicts, and we have worse problems on the horizon, particularly in our ocean space. And this is just a really wonderful method to be able to put all of the users, the stakeholders, the federal agencies, the tribes at the table.
Along with resolving conflicts, Kurtula says the focus on planning can provide more information about coastal waters, such as mapping the seabed.
We know so little about the ocean floor. We don't even have charts. I mean, in many parts of Alaska, we don't have accurate charting. So it comes down also to health and safety.
Kurtula was also engaged in efforts to stop illegally caught fish from being brought into the country.
One of the things that was very shocking to me when I went outside, spent so much time outside these last 2 years, was the problem with illegal fish. I mean, and not knowing what fish you were even getting many times in restaurants.
Kurtula ended her work at the end of June. Since Obama launched the National Ocean Council with an executive order, President-elect Donald Trump will be able to end it with a stroke of a pen. That has Kurtula worried.
My hope is that there won't be knee-jerk reactions about overturning the executive order. But there's a lot of concern about it and about what that would mean. If that happens, the effort's not going to stop because you need something like this.
She's taking some time off now that she's returned to Juneau, helping her husband, University of Alaska Southeast Professor Jim Powell, and her elderly father, former State Senator Jay Kurtula. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from APRN's Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Alaska Energy Desk's Zoe Sobel in St. Paul, and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.